Turn to Proverbs 9:7. Proverbs 9:7, which I tell you to turn there, I'm not even there. Proverbs 9, verse 7, it says, "He that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself shame, and he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot." So this is some interesting and important instruction here. So Solomon says, wisdom saying, "He that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself shame." In the previous verse there, in verse 6, wisdom exhorted the simple to forsake the foolish and go in the way of understanding. And if you remember, to forsake means to abandon, leave entirely, withdraw from, especially to withdraw one's presence and help or compassion, a companionship, that is, from, to desert. In this verse, in verse 7, wisdom gives the reason for forsaking fools rather than remaining with them and trying to change them. Because some people think, as I alluded to last time, that there's no reason to forsake the foolish, just try to change them, help them to amend their ways. And in some context, maybe so. Maybe you would give foolish people that opportunity, that chance. But when a foolish person is shown themselves to be a foolish person, that's when it's time to forsake them. And to just stick around trying to change them is not going to work. Those who reprove scorners get to themselves shame, not change. If you reprove a scorner, you get shame. The Bible teaches us in numerous places that fools are to be abandoned and deserted, not argued with. Proverbs 14 and verse 7 is the first one. Now, probably a lot of us, maybe all of us, have been guilty at one time or another of arguing with fools. I know I've spent plenty of time, especially earlier, you know, several years ago in the beginning of my ministry, I spent lots of time arguing with fools. I don't spend nearly as much time now, almost none, because it's an exercise in futility, for one, and it's just a waste of my time. I have better things to do.
At work?
Oh, yeah.
If you're in charge of someone like I was, you have it all the time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no doubt. But it's just not worth it. If I'm going to spend an hour or 2 hours debating online with some moron that maybe two other people are going to see in some comment section somewhere, I may as well just go write a blog about something, post it, send it out to 150-some people, and somebody will get something out of it, right? Rather than, you know, just wasting my time in some comment section somewhere. So I don't do much of that anymore at all, and I haven't for a long time. But Proverbs 14 and verse 7. But I will say the only advantage to that is if other people are listening or watching, it can be beneficial because other people will get to see the truth of your argument and could be persuaded. So if there are passers-by, in certain instances, it could be beneficial.
Beneficial to answer a fool.
Yeah, to argue with a fool. Yeah. But, you know, you want to be careful about that.
Like in a debate set up, yeah. Like Conrad used to do.
Yes. Yeah, debates are great if it's a proper
right.
Debate. And yeah, because that way you're never, I shouldn't say never, but I can't imagine that any participant in a debate has ever had his mind changed in a debate, in a formal debate. I mean, I just can't imagine somebody walking away. But the people that are watching,
right.
They can have their mind changed. And
right.
And especially if it's an Oxford-style debate, because in an Oxford-style, the people vote ahead of time. They get the resolution, whatever it is. They vote ahead of time, yes or no, or undecided. At the end of the debate, then they vote yes or no or undecided, and you see who changed more minds. So you could walk into an Oxford-style debate having 90% of the people against you and 10% of the people for you, and if at the end of the debate you have 11% of the people for you and 89 against you, you won the debate.
You won. Yeah.
Because you changed more minds.
Like who won the debate.
Yep. Now that makes sense. Just polling the audience at the end of the debate and saying who won, I mean, it just depends on who brought the most people, really, on your side, and that's not fair at all. So, yeah, definitely, if I was ever going to do a public debate, it would be an Oxford style, no doubt. Okay, anyway, Proverbs 14 and verse 7. Fools make a mock at sin, but among the righteous there is favor. That's verse 9. Let's do verse 7, the one that I said. Mm-hmm. Go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceivest not in him the lips of knowledge. It doesn't say, hey, when you find out, when you realize that this guy's a fool, just keep arguing with him for a while. No, go from the presence of a foolish man. So, you know, just read through the book of Proverbs, find all the characteristics of a fool, find a guy that won't be reproved, that won't be corrected, that, you know, things like that. And you find somebody like that, just go from his presence. If you try to reason with a fool, he will despise your wise words. And I see there that I have "he will" repeated twice in the outline. Let me just cross one of those off. Where was it? I can't even find it now. Oh, there we go. Yeah, if you try to reason with a fool, he will despise your wise words. Proverbs 23 and verse 9. And by the way, in an Oxford-style debate, if you walk into the debate with the vast majority of people agreeing with you and you lose the debate, it really makes you look bad. Because, you know, you haven't hardly changed any minds, and I've seen that happen before. Anyway, Proverbs 23 and verse 9. So speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of thy words. So there's some people it's just best to save your breath, because, you know, they're not going to appreciate what you have to say to them. Proverbs 1 and verse 7. Well, I guess getting back to the Oxford thing, the one that's really embarrassing is when you walk in there with hardly anybody on your side, and you've got a whole room full of people to change their minds, and you don't change anybody's mind. And I saw this in a I listen to debates sometimes at the Soho Forum, and I saw this poor guy. I think he came in with like less than 10% of the vote, and he lost. Yeah, the other guy, even though he had like 90%, even convinced the few people that didn't agree with him. To agree with him. Yeah, so that was pretty embarrassing. But the guy, I forget what the debate was on, but the guy deserved to be embarrassed for the position that he held. So, Proverbs 1 and verse 7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." That's why they're to be abandoned and deserted. And you find somebody that just despises wisdom and instruction, why would you waste your time telling them about it? And people like this, it doesn't really matter what kind of tactics you use. You can be nice to them, you can be mean to them, and they're not going to change their mind. Proverbs 29 and verse 9. There are some people like that. They're just so bullheaded that it just doesn't matter. You could entreat them or you could scream at them, and nothing's going to get through to them. Proverbs 29 and verse 9. "If a wise man contendeth with a foolish man, whether he rage or laugh, there is no rest." I'll just keep on arguing with you. It just doesn't matter. When someone shows himself to be righteous in his own eyes, you want to cease speaking to that person. That's what Job's friends did. In Job 32 and verse 1, you read through the book of Job and you get about 30 chapters here of these guys going back and forth with these long arguments. And it just shows you how far we have devolved in our understanding and education and intelligence. Because read through the book of Job, and how often do you find four friends having conversations like this and speaking to each other like this? I mean, like, never. I mean, I've never spoken like this in my life. I don't even have that kind of intellect to talk in such language. And, you know, I don't really meet anybody else these days that does either, but these guys were quite interesting. But anyway, after they went on and on and on and argued back and forth, Job's friends finally had enough because Job was righteous in his own eyes. Job 32, verse 1, "So these three men ceased to answer Job because he was righteous in his own eyes." This was a case of a man's affliction bringing out secret sins, secret character flaws that he didn't even know about. Because it says of Job in the very first verse that he was a righteous man and he eschewed evil. It says, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was a perfect and upright, was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. This is God saying this. Perfect and upright. Feared God, eschewed evil. He was a really good man. But through his affliction, it brought out some things in him that weren't apparent. Pride, being righteous in his own eyes. And it wasn't just his friends saying, oh, he's righteous in his own eyes. He was. Because you read the last couple of chapters, and Job wants to have his day in court with God and say, you know what, you were wrong for doing this, and you don't know what you're doing. And God says, oh yeah, where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me about it. You know, hast thou created Leviathan like I have? You know, he starts giving off all these questions. And Job ends that whole discussion with saying, I abhor myself. I repent in sackcloth and ashes. So there was things in Job's heart that he didn't know about. I'll tell you what, I know this one from personal experience. You want to find out some things that are in you that you didn't know about? Get married. Get married, and you'll find out things about yourself that you didn't know, character flaws in yourself that you didn't know about until you get married and you get close to somebody like that, and somebody's, you're spending all your time or a lot of your time with somebody, and all of a sudden you find out, well, it's pretty easy to get along with people when I live by myself. Not quite so easy when there's somebody around all the time. That was kind of an eye-opener for me when I got married for a while. And then fools can be beaten to a pulp, and they will not change. Proverbs 27 and verse 22. Proverbs 27 and verse 22. Though thou shouldest bray a fool, to bray means to beat small, to bruise, pound, crush to powder. Though thou shouldest bray a fool in a mortar among wheat with a pestle, yet will not his foolishness depart from him. You've seen mortars and pestles, you'd probably be ground up grains and things like that. You just imagine putting a fool in one of those things and just grinding him to powder. And just all the while, you're grinding him, and he just looks like flour. And he's still shaking his fist at you. Because that's what fools do. I've said this before, I've seen Christians suffer severely and yet not change and just keep practicing the same unbiblical behavior. It's amazing. I mean, I've seen people just suffer, and I think, boy, this is going to change them. Nope. It's just amazing to me. Sometimes it's just like people just don't get... They don't get the point. They don't take the hints, and some hints are not really all that subtle from God sometimes. Proverbs 17 and verse 10. A reproof entereth more into a wise man than 100 stripes into a fool. And I'm sure I know I've talked to lots of parents, and they'll have multiple children, and one of their children, all they have to do is look at him. Give him a bad look. Or maybe say, don't do that, and that's it. The other child, oh, you lay 100 stripes on him, and guess what? As soon as you walk away, he's going to do the same thing that he wanted to do anyway. Some people just have to learn the hard way, and then some people just don't ever learn. But so I think some parents, they get lucky because their first kid is the one where you just have to look at him. And then they think, oh, this parenting thing, this is really easy. You know, these other people, they must not know what they're doing. And then they get the second one, right? And it's a totally different story. And then all of a sudden they realize, oh, well, maybe it's not quite so easy. So he that reproves a scorner gets shame. To reprove is to reject, to express disapproval of conduct, actions, beliefs, etc. To censure, condemn. To reprehend, rebuke, chide. Or blame, chide, or find fault with a person. So that's what it is to reprove. It's to really get on somebody and tell them where they're wrong, tell them where they need to change. And then a scorner is one who scorns, derides, mocks, or contemns, especially one who scoffs at religion. And to scorn is to speak or behave contemptuously, to use derisive language, jeer, to treat with ridicule, to show extreme contempt for, to mock, deride. So I think you could probably, just with the definition here, you can probably start getting the idea of when it says that he that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself shame. Because we're not talking about just, you know, your average dumb guy here. I mean, we're talking about somebody that just is just a real jerk. And he's contemptuous. He ridicules anything that's right. He just super hard to get along with. Mocks, you know, just holds everything in contempt, just hates everything. He's a know-it-all, this kind of guy, right? Well, when you reprove somebody like that, you get shame. Shame is the painful emotion arising from the consciousness of something dishonoring, ridiculous, or indecorous in one's own conduct or circumstances, or in those of others whose honor or disgrace one regards as one's own. Like you can imagine if somebody, your own child or your husband or your wife or, you know, your parent or something like that, and somebody does something really embarrassing, you feel shame. You almost feel as if you were the one that did it, right? You ever feel ashamed or embarrassed for somebody? I have, you know, lots of times. Or of being in a situation which offends one's sense of modesty or decency. You know, it talks about in the Bible that they refused to be ashamed and had a whore's forehead. And I see that today with the way that women dress. They're not ashamed. They wear things that I mean, I'm not a woman, but I can't imagine like walking around in a bikini or something with like my entire legs and everything showing. Like that would be really super embarrassing. But women, they don't have shame. Walk around showing their breasts and their midsections. And I mean, a lot of these shorts these girls wear, you can literally see their butt cheeks. You can see the bottom of their butt cheeks. I see it all the time. And I don't want to see it. They have no shame, no sense of modesty or decency. The thing about scorners is they will not hear rebuke. Proverbs 13 and verse 1. A wise son heareth his father's instruction, but a scorner heareth not rebuke. And not only doesn't he hear it, he's going to turn around and cause you trouble. And this is what Solomon's talking about here. A scorner will not love you for reproving him. Proverbs 15 and verse 12. This is a good way where you can identify a fool. Rebuke a wise man, he'll love you. Rebuke a fool and he'll hate you for it. Proverbs 15 and verse 12. It says, a scorner loveth not one that reproveth him, neither will he go unto the wise. He's not wanting any good counsel. He doesn't like being reproved. He likes the smooth preachers that tell him he's such a good guy and he does everything right. And, you know, prophesy unto us smooth things. Prophesy deceits, as they say. Now, if you rebuke and censure a man who mocks, scoffs, contemns, ridicules, and derides the truth of God, he will turn his mockery toward you and make you ashamed. That's why I, you know, wouldn't recommend rebuking some of these real hardcore atheist types, the real militant ones, and I've met a number of them in my time, and you can just go on YouTube and find these kind of people. If you rebuke one of them, they will try their best to bring you to shame. I mean, some of the stuff that people say about me, I think it's funny. I'm not really easily offended when they call me an egghead or like insulting me because I'm bald or something like that. Or, you know, it doesn't bother me. But, you know, some people, that kind of thing bothers me. I mean, you try to rebuke one of these atheists and they come at you and start making fun of the way you look or something. Yeah, that makes some people ashamed anyway. You ever see that old movie? You probably didn't, and I'm sure it was a horrible movie. I saw it long, 20 years ago when I was in high school or something, but it was called Powder. I don't even remember what it was. It was this guy. I think he had some kind of power or something. It was a really strange movie, but the guy was bald. He was an albino, and he was bald, and some guy left a comment on one of my videos, and he just says, Powder, with an exclamation mark. But yeah, that's the kind of stuff that I get, but anyway. Oh, let's see, where was it? Yeah, so if you rebuke somebody like that, they're definitely going to turn their mockery toward you. And if you answer a fool according to his folly, you'll be like him and end up ashamed. Proverbs 26 and verse 4. Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou also be like unto him. And if you're like him, well, that's a shameful thing, isn't it? Mark Twain said, and I've given you this quote before, I really like it. He said, never argue with a fool. Onlookers may not be able to tell the difference. And that's true. Now, like, Mark Twain was a witty guy. I really, yeah. really like that guy. He was a Missourian, too, from Hannibal.
Will Rogers was another one that was really witty that way.
I haven't read him before.
Oh, he had luck. He was much later than, and he had most of his comments were toward politicians.
Yeah. Oh, Mark Twain had a lot of those too. Yeah. Was it Twain that said, "Imagine that I am a politician, then imagine that I am an idiot." But I repeat myself. I think that was Mark Twain. But. And then the verse concludes with, and he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot. So to rebuke is like to reprove, because that's what she said first, right? He that reproveth a scorner. Well, he that rebuketh a wicked man gets the same thing, or something similar. To rebuke is to beat down or force back, to repress or check a person, to repulse. That's an obsolete definition. That you know, the preacher's told to rebuke, exhort. You know, if I was beating down church members, that might be effective, but not exactly my style. So, secondly, it is to reprove, reprimand, chide severely, and that's what the preacher is told to do. But if you do that to a wicked man, you're going to get yourself a blot, which is a spot or stain of ink, mud, or other discoloring matter, a disfiguring spot or mark, figuratively a moral stain or disgrace, fault, or blemish. So, a black eye kind of thing, right? That's kind of like a blot. But it's more than likely a blot on your character, on yourself. You're going to look foolish, right? You're going to have a big stain on your shirt or something. You're going to look foolish is what's going to happen here. Now, this next sentence may sound weird, but it's true. Rebuke is a precious blessing, which should be reserved for righteous and wise people who will receive it and love you for it. It's a precious blessing, rebuke is. Now, fools wouldn't understand that. They say, what do you mean, getting yelled at? Somebody telling you you're wrong? That's not a precious blessing. That's a curse. But if you're a wise and a righteous man, rebuke is a precious blessing. But it shouldn't just be wasted on anybody. Don't waste your words rebuking fools. Proverbs 9, 8 through 9.
And if it's done correctly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you need to do it in love, of course.
You're an idiot.
Yeah, right. No, that's not really rebuke. I mean, that would be more of just
speech.
Yeah, or railing, or that kind of thing. Proverbs 9, 8 through 9. Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. That's why I say that rebuke is a precious blessing. I've thanked God for the times that I've been rebuked. If you want to get rebuked, get married. I mean, spouses should be rebuking each other. They really should be. You know, I've said it before. Tell your spouse when he's wrong or when she's wrong, because if you don't, nobody else will. That's really important. I'm glad that I have a wife that is not afraid to tell me when I'm wrong. A scorner, the Bible says, is an abomination to men. Proverbs 24 and verse 9. This is why when you reprove a scorner, you're going to get a shame and a blot, because these kind of people are just hateful people. Proverbs 24 and verse 9. Proverbs 24 and verse 9. The thought of foolishness is sin, and the scorner is an abomination to men. Remember, abomination is a feeling of combined disgust and hatred. And I just read you the definition of a scorner a while back, and I think you can understand why he's an abomination to men. I mean, this is the kind of guy that just mocks and jeers and ridicules, and people hate people like that, and I don't blame them. I do too. Scorners are full of proud wrath when they get corrected. This is how you can tell a fool. When he gets mad, right? When you correct him and he gets mad, especially when he stays mad. You know, some people, you get rebuked, and at first you're offended, and you get kind of mad. You know, that's not right, but it's understandable. But the fool, when he just lets that, he just sits there, it's just like a cauldron, and it's just stewing in him, and he's like, I can't believe that guy told me that. That's a fool. That's a total idiot. If the guy was right, I mean, if you were wrong and he corrects you about something and you just stew about it and get mad, that's absolute folly. Proverbs 21 and verse 24. Proud and haughty scorner is his name who dealeth in proud wrath. See, the scorner has proud wrath. He thinks so highly of himself. How dare you tell me I'm wrong? How dare you correct me? He's just full of wrath because who are you to tell me that I'm wrong? That's a scorner with proud wrath. If you give holy rebuke, and that's H-O-L-Y, holy, I'm talking about something that is godly. If you give holy rebuke and reproof unto dogs, and cast these precious pearls before swine, they will trample them under their feet, turn on you, and rend you. Matthew 7 and verse 6. Rebuke and reproof are wonderful things. Just don't waste them on people that don't deserve them. Matthew 7 and verse 6. Give not that which is holy unto dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and rend you. I'm not even taking this verse out of context. The context of the verse is judging another person, right? We're not supposed to be hypocritically judging. That's what Jesus is saying here. He's saying take the mote out of your eye so you can take the beam out of somebody else's eye. But that's judging. So you correct yourself first, rebuke yourself first, and then correct the other person. But don't give that which is holy unto dogs. Don't waste your time correcting a fool who's just going to turn on you, try to counter-accuse you, spread malicious rumors about you, hate you, resent you, have bitterness in his heart. Don't waste your time with somebody like that. That's what Solomon's saying here. He said that they will rend you, just like a pig. You walk into a pig pen and you end up getting torn up. Rend is to tear or pull violently or by main force. It can be rend off or rend out of or rend from a thing or place. It's to tear off or away, to tear apart, asunder, or in pieces. You know, give not that which is holy unto dogs. They'll tear you in pieces, right? Dogs are ravenous. You know, the scripture talks about ravenous wolves, right? That people like that will bite and devour you. You don't want to waste your time with them. Scorners will lay a snare for those who reprove them. Isaiah 29 and verse 21. You know, there are vindictive people out there that their pastor would preach a sermon and would offend them, and then they go on one of these private investigator sites and look up every piece of dirt that they could possibly find on him and try to find something so that they could counter-accuse him. There's evil people out there that do that kind of thing. I've never had it happen to me, thankfully, but I've heard of situations like that before. Isaiah 29 and verse 21. That make a man an offender for a word, and lay a snare for him that reproveth in the gate, and turn aside the just for a thing of naught. The guy that reproves them, they're going to lay a snare for him. They're going to try to catch him, just like they did Jesus. Remember, they tried to catch him in his words. They asked him questions. They tried to provoke him. They tried to urge him, to get him to lose his temper, to say something so that they would have something to accuse him with. This is what these kind of people do. They'll try to get back at you, and they're vindictive. So don't bother reproving them. If you don't want to be abused, don't rebuke a scorner. This is especially true of strangers or those that are not close to you. Why would you waste your time? You got some guy that works for you at work, and he's a scorner. He's a proud fool. Why would you waste your time reproving him if you didn't absolutely have to? Especially if it was about something in his personal life. You'd be crazy to do that, right? He's just going to turn and rend you. But here's a caveat. If people who need reproved are very close to you, and their bad or foolish behavior is severely affecting your life, it may be worth it to reprove them and stand up boldly to the retaliation in order to stop their bad behavior. There could be a time when you have somebody very close to you in your family or something like that, and they're doing things that are really foolish, that are harming you yourself and really affecting you. Yeah, it's going to hurt. Yeah, you're going to tell, you know, when I say something to him, he's going to blow up, he's going to get mad or whatever. But sometimes it's worth it to just take the abuse and just stand up to him. Just say, nope, I will not deal with this anymore. I will not accept this behavior. Go ahead, rail at me, get mad at me, yell at me, whatever. But you're wrong, period. And just stand your ground. Sometimes it's worth it if your life is being severely affected by somebody like that. That's what you call tough love. Leviticus 19 and verse 17. I would not do that with a stranger. I wouldn't do that with somebody like that. But somebody that's close enough to you that, you know, has the ability to really mess up your life, yeah, it's worth it, I think, to deal with that. Because then you can hopefully correct the behavior, and then you're not living with that kind of stuff forever. Just, you know, take the pain up front instead of taking it for a long time. Leviticus 19 and verse 17. Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thine heart. Thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor, and not suffer sin upon him. It's a loving thing to rebuke the neighbor, to not suffer sin upon him when he's wrong. Now, here's something to think about. If you are never reproved or corrected by those close to you, it could be that they know that you will reject it like a fool, get angry, and retaliate. You think, well, I never get reproved. Well, that's not a good thing, because maybe you don't get reproved for a reason. Maybe everybody around you is like, oh, I don't dare tell that guy anything, or he's going to be, or she's going to be, fly off the handle and get mad and reject it. Your loved ones and friends might just be sparing themselves abuse by withholding rebuke from you. So I'd say to everybody, search your heart to know this is true of you. Are you the kind of person that's approachable? Ask yourself that. Am I approachable? Do people feel comfortable correcting me? How about your spouse? Does your spouse feel comfortable correcting you? Or would they dare not say anything? Do I receive correction, and am I thankful for it when I do? Do I reject reproof and start defending myself? Not a good thing. If you immediately start defending yourself when somebody corrects you, maybe you are right, but you ought to listen. Listen with an open mind and listen honestly. Be honest with yourself and say, is what this person telling me about myself, is this true? And you may need to give it a day. You may need to calm down. You may, you know, just table it, think about it, let the emotions subside, and then say, is this true, what this person has said? But if you immediately start defending yourself, you're wasting their time and yours. Do I rationalize and never admit the truth about myself and my actions? I'm going to ask that too. Because people do that. It's painful to hear the truth about yourself when it's not good, and you start rationalizing. Well, you know, it's not really that bad. Oh, I don't really do that, you know. And before you know it, you've convinced yourself, no, it's really okay. So ask yourself those questions. Because, you know, I don't know about you, but I want to be corrected and reproved when I'm wrong. Because I don't like being wrong. I don't like being a fool. I don't like living in a way that irritates or harms others. I don't like that. I'd rather take the pain, hear the reproof, accept it, and become a better person for it. So next time we'll pick up with Proverbs chapter 9 and talk about rebuking fools and wise men and seeing the difference in how they respond.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/ churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.